Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, August 15th, 2014. This is Jeff Dunphy, and this show is called Retooling for Your Coming of Age. Today, we're going to talk about life and death. And today, we're going to listen to some poetry, and today, we're going to chat about the calamity that has fallen upon Earth, and also about the rebirth of this new age. And we're going to start with a bit of Shakespeare. Tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow creeps in its petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die. To sleep. To sleep. Perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. Or in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. When we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, a proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a fair folly. Who would bardle spare to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but death, the dread of something after death? The undiscovered country, from whose bourne no traveller returns, puzzles the will, and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus, conscience doth make cowards of us all, and thus, the native hue of resolution is sickly war with the pale cast of thought, and enterprises of great pith and moment with this regard, their currents turn awry and lose the name of action.
Well, Shakespeare, in his brilliance, has given us many things to ponder and many things to brood upon and many things of an esoteric nature. We speak of death and we speak of life. And in the ancient scriptures, there is the seventh postulate, which comes to us from the secret doctrine that Helena Blavatsky brought us. And the seventh postulate, quite simply, is there is no death, only changes of state. Birth and rebirth are endless until karma is satisfied and reincarnation ceases. Now, what is it that we find in death that scares us so? It is, but rather, our ignorance of it, and in fact, our societal ignorance of it. And I want to share another poem by another great poet, and I want to speak some more of it, if I might.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death, who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the night.
Well then, what an interesting way to start our show. And let us not be lost for want of understanding. We have Shakespeare soliloquies, we have Dylan Thomas, and we have the crises that is upon the planet right now as it loses or its last era dies and the new era presents itself to us. And as the ancients have been known to say from time to time, eternally and forevermore, the future of mankind knows no limit. We oftentimes get lost in the minutiae. We oftentimes get lost and lose the sight of the forest for the trees. And what brings about this topic, you might add? Well, I suspect few have not heard of the passing of Robin Williams. I want to chat a bit about his passing. I want to chat a little about depression and what it constitutes, if you will, from an esoteric perspective. And I want to chat a little about the coming days as things accelerate into quite a calamity. We are, if you will, entering an era and a stage where the old is disappearing and the new is presenting itself. And as someone has wanted to tell this story, I will recount it now to you relative to the birth of a new age and the end of another. Imagine, if you will, a camera studio, a television studio set up in the uterus of a woman. And we have at the beginning of the creation of a child, we have a bunch of energetics going on. We have the fertilization of the egg, and now we watch the unfolding of this brilliant creature go through all of its stages of being and developing. So first we see it look as a little tadpole, and then we see it take on the form of an embryo, and then we see it pass from embryo to fetus, and then we see it grow up and suck its thumb and have hiccups, all in utero. And we see this and we marvel at the creative force of life, And then not too soon after, the calamity of what we call birth, but what the camera views is quite different than what we view from the outside. We are lost in the trees for want of seeing the forest. So contractions start and Mother Nature takes her course and a child is born. We see from the camera's perspective, we see bright lights. We see grunting and groaning and perhaps yells, perhaps a bit of blood and perhaps a departure of this brilliant show we've been watching for the past 9 months. And it is in that bright light that this child is pushed into. But from the camera's perspective, it seems as if it is the end of the show, for the womb is now empty. There is no screaming going on. There is just black and no longer this creative, brilliant, magnificent force of nature residing within the womb of this woman. So should we be on the inside of this female body, we would be mourning over the loss of this child. However, what is happening? On the other side, somebody is rejoicing that child's arrival. And as most mothers will attest, the discomfort, the gestation period, and the pain of delivering a child is very quickly outweighed by the magnificence of this child's arrival. Now, if we participate in the law of correspondence, or the law that stipulates as above, so below, and as below, so above, we will participate in the coming of a new age. This is what is happening right now. This is what is happening right now. Now we are, and we have seen in our history, in our recent history, we have seen world wars. And I am not here to say that another world war has started, but I am here to say that it is not an unlikely occurrence with what is currently happening. Let us be forever vigilant in paying attention. Let us be forever cognizant of the fact that the governments that would wage war are powerless without the people behind them and their support. And consequently, when we stand up and say no more war, they would have to listen. And it will take many brave souls to say no more in order to facilitate that. It was made reference to in the 40s that the crisis in human affairs was so intense that man was forced to look into the nature of the atom's nucleus for his salvation, and the result was obviously nuclear fission. And on the surface, this was an event large enough to change the world order of things for all time. But beneath it all, there was an event taking place that was even more significant. In the body of the logos of this planet, something unique was occurring. The mineral kingdom and its forms in its etheric aspects, that chakra in his body of the soul of the planetary logos of consciousness, which is in man the muladhara, the base of the spine. And in the same great one, the human kingdom represents the throat chakra. So it means, in terms of the spiritual unfoldment of the planetary consciousness, that for that the first time the attention of a higher center was being directed consciously to that of a lower. Mankind, acting as the planetary throat chakra, was stimulating directly and consciously the root chakra of the planet. An event fraught with massive danger as well as brilliant spiritual possibilities. Now, until then, the activity of this center of planetary kundalini, if you will, had been confined to natural events like volcanoes and earthquakes and lightning, and in response to the lunar eclipses of the Earth and also the solar magnetic storms, that of Amun-Ra. Now, however, The release of light, heat, and radiation from the atomic nucleus added to the pressures, coaxing planetary Kundalini from its lair. By reciprocal action, humanity began to feel a series of responses in her most sensitive organisms, located in what Theosophy terms and what we chat about as the fifth root race. And this branch of it we know as the Anglo-Saxon, and it is also made reference to as the Aryan branch, not the Hitler-Aryan branch, the Aryan branch. And we call these symptoms of planetary growth operating through those in humanity are advanced enough to manage these energies, we quite simply call it stress. Now, the stress is everywhere. It is imposed upon us by our very way of life. It's competitiveness reinforced by both mainstream media, church, education. Its standard of living, its codes of conduct, its ethics and laws all contribute to a situation where we are continually subjected to stress. And after World War II, there was this collective outbreathing of relief, thinking that it would only be a matter of time before that stress, which was mounted by what mighty operation, would be alleviated by it. And however, it wasn't. Then we blamed the Iron Curtain. This was the Russians and the Chinese, and the population increase and the massive accumulation of wealth by the 1%. So unfortunately, we have to face up to the very fact that stress is here to stay. And it is a part of life. And more to that, it is a challenge presented to this fifth root race, the fifth sub-race, us, the Aryans. Now this stress, common to all of us in the West, is reaching such proportions that many are hard put to cope with it. Indeed, few, only a few, know how to approach the problem, and of those, even less, know what are the causes of this increasing stress. Not only is stress here to stay, but it is one that is essential for the spiritual unfoldment of the race. And let me reiterate that. This stress contributes to the unfolding of the race, the evolution of the race. Without this stress, without these challenges, and without the pain that is commensurate with them, mankind would not evolve. An interesting concept, right? Now, somehow, we are called to live our lives and still find in them the capacity, the ability, and the initiative to express, as Plato and Socrates would say, truth, beauty, and goodness. And for those of us who are retooling for our coming of age, it is our objective to establish ways and means of attaining union with the higher kingdoms. That's the real challenge presented to the leaders of the esoteric and the leaders of those who choose to retool, to point a way that in spite of the stress, we can rise above the challenges of stress and above the angst and anxiety of the planet as it unfolds, and brings us, in spite of the special circumstances, to the feet of those who would direct us. Some would call them the divine directors of this thing. It was often said that the Buddhist monks had to learn how to sit under a tolling bell and meditate. So the bell that would be tolling for man in the West is stress, unabated and omnipresent. Maybe it's a part of the karma of the lives of leisure as ruling classes in the slave-riddled Greek or Roman states, even in the British Empire. Who knows? But this is the condition that we're facing right now, and it must be mastered. We have to live with it, even if we come back 10 times into a physical vehicle whose only response is, at first, to produce those diseases that stress entails. Therein lies the challenge of what is happening in this regard. And that leads us into another aspect of what I want to address. Now, my particular inclination in the building of this show, in the turning on of the lights, and in the awakening to the genius that resides within, is to inspire all those who choose to have eyes to see and ears to hear the majesty of their presence within them. Now, oftentimes we have a history that creates great barriers to us recognizing the brilliance of who we are. And consequently, it results in underestimation of our capacities and incapacity to understand where our soul would have us go. Now, why is it that we are going through this unbelievable calamity? Why is it that volcanoes are happening and earthquakes are happening and floods are happening? There again was another flood on the east coast of the U.S. What is it that's going on? Why is it that we are seeing these earth changes? Take heed. The earth changes, as does mankind. It can't help but. That's the law of correspondence. When the gods look down upon us, they must often look over us and think and noodle on the very fact that this fourth kingdom, the human race, the mineral, the plant, the animal, and the human race is the fourth kingdom. They have to look down and actually noodle over these particularly unpleasant qualities that the fourth kingdom manifests. It's a visual image that does not create a pleasant story. We have the greed, unfettered and blatant and shameful, if you will, of the 1% who would steal all the wealth of all the people on the planet to hoard themselves because they seem to think that physical wealth is in fact worth something. We have the governments fighting each other, deciding who will rule, and using technology to bring the fight to people. We have distress and we have upset in Russia, in China, in Africa, in the Middle East. It surrounds us. So there's a story that was given me by one of my teachers, and it goes like this. There's a delinquent child that's eating bananas and throwing them all along the pathway with their skins. This that commits nuisances and escapes from confinement, that disregards lower forms of life that stand in his way, kicking of the cats, if you will, pulling of the dog's tail, that is completely absorbed in his own affairs, mainly selfishly, that hoards riches at the expense of Mother Nature, that disregards natural laws, acts with irrationality and makes unsound propositions, and is often consumed with self-blame and guilt. A child that will not listen and will not be led despite the presence and guidance of an elder brother. There are human qualities that stand out, and we should add to the above, and by way of hope and optimism for this delinquent child, the courage that characterizes us on this planet and our capacity to sustain stress and pressures and to adapt and to manifest eternally, if you will, the qualities of hope and persistence, courage, hope, and adaptability. these traits, these characteristics, these attributes are those that will serve us well. Now, if you will, these would be the virtues of a particular ray, which we haven't chatted much about, and we will in later shows. But the vices of this ray would be worry, fear, inertia, cowardice, and depression. Let us not lose sight of the very fact that depression, very prevalent among those who we would call light bearers, and it has presented itself to many who have historically been on the path in another lifetime and who are waking up to their call to be on the path in this lifetime. Now, that being said, we are in such a dense chapter of the human evolution, of the planetary evolution, that when we do arrive on the planet yet another time, we find it quite difficult to wake up, and consequently our gifts and our attributes that we have accumulated over past lifetimes present themselves in such a fashion where we can, if we choose to, ignore finding the light and moving into an alignment with our soul and with our genius, and fall victim to, if you will, the material world. There are those light bearers who are very clever, very competent, very intelligent, pick things up quite easily, and even though they have challenges in their lives, they tend to, if they choose not to wake up, hide in the material aspect that is the world. Now, there are those souls who park themselves in harm's way in parts of the world that would have them, by necessity, extricate themselves from those challenges. And then there are those who park themselves in the West, who, by the very presence of their gifts and their attributes, can waddle along through life easily and without giving things much of a concern. There are those of us and those of you who may be listening that know and get when the call comes, the clarion call, that it is a call that cannot be denied. And also, you ignore it at your own peril. This, from an esoteric perspective, we would make reference to as a midlife crisis. A midlife crisis is when you get to that place where you have the right car, you have the right house, you have the right wife, and you have the right children, and they do not consume all of your time. You sit back and you say, ah, does and will and should all these material things serve me? Do they make me happier? Who do we find? What do we find? When do we find those things that feed the soul? That is an aspect of the midlife crisis. Now, for some of my students, they're having their midlife crisis in their early 20s, believe it or not. This is the aspect of an advanced soul. Now, the other attribute and aspect of all of this that presents itself is that there are those who are in the system right now who are so bright and clever and clear that material goods, because they've been raised with them, are sensitively meaningless. They recognize their utility, but they have less and less attachment to them. Certainly this was one of Buddha's observations, and certainly all of mankind's suffering is a result of his attachments. As one of the teachers has once been known to say, it is the time to get attached to detachment and to get detached from attachment. Now, I was directed by a friend to watch Charlie Rose recently when he did a review of Robin Williams, because Charlie Rose and Robin Williams were lovely friends. And they, Robin Williams came on his show often, and he put together a little montage of Robin's time. And they chatted, and they spoke of what he was doing and how he was doing it. And Robin Williams, as you know, chose to end his life out brief candle, right? To be or not to be. Now, the ending of his life, as is often the case of those brilliant individuals on the planet, brings about a revisiting of their gifts and of their talents and of their genius, in essence. And there are those on the planet who cannot help but express their genius. And there are those on the planet who can but ignore their genius, and it renders them incomplete. And when we talk of and we speak to a midlife crisis, it could be looked upon as the inability to reconcile the life that you have spent, your life creating, with the one that you know you should be living. And an interesting unfoldment of all of this, that they say that if you have the right house, and they say that if you have the right wife, and they say that if you have the right children and the right things, you will be happy. Mainstream media, the psychological geniuses that understand and study how to manipulate mankind into doing what they want you to do. And on the other side of that fence are those brilliant geniuses, adepts, savants, who do everything they can in their power to turn the lights on for humanity so they can step into their coming of age. So the reconciliation of living the life that they know they should be living presents itself with great clarity. The ringing of the clarion call, right? Now, one of the things that I watched and listened to from Robin Williams was his embrace and his art of being able to tell stories, and how important it was for him to be able to tell stories. Now, stories are unbelievably important, and in fact, in days of yesteryear, it was the method and the manner in which all great wisdom was passed down. It was the way and the manner in which all great wisdom was passed down. Why? Well, the art of storytelling, and for those of you who know good storytellers, there is nothing so magnificent as listening to a story that has an effect on you, physically, emotionally, and mentally. And there are those stories that serve us well throughout time. And clearly, the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, name a book that portends to connect to the higher realms. And each and every one of them is filled with stories, parables. And why is it that the masters all taught in them? Because a story can be told. The same story can be told to a 9-year-old, a 19-year-old, a 29-year-old, and a 99-year-old. And it will, in its brilliance, unveil aspects of revelation to each one of them at their particular stage of development. And each comprehensive aspect of that story can nurture an individual whose awakening is presented to him. Now, if you wander in to the rabbit hole that suggests that we on the earth have and are constantly pulled to wake up as opposed to directed to consume, now is the time to reconcile things. It doesn't matter how big the car is. It doesn't matter how big the house is. It doesn't matter how fine the clothes are. Now is time to find that part of you and that part of reality that feeds your soul and that presents you with something that makes you wake up in the morning and cannot wait to get to work, to get to the task at hand. And the task at hand is waking yourself up and waking everyone and everything up around you to the best of your capacity. And as I want to say from time to time, you do not have to be a full glass of water to quench your thirst. The art of retooling for your coming of age is knowing that a smile, well placed and with brilliant and divine intention, can change the lives of anybody. You know, it brings me to a story that I'm sure many of you have heard. And it goes about where an individual was cleaning out their locker at school, and this seemed quite odd because it was not the end of the term or the end of the semester. And one of his classmates wandered by and said, "Oh, hi, I mean, what are you doing?" "Well, I'm just cleaning out my locker." To that end, the student that was walking by said, "Oh, okay, well, why don't I give you a hand and I'll help you?" So they wandered home and they chatted, and this newfound friend, if you will, for the individual who was emptying his locker seemed not to have many at the time. This newfound friend helped him into the house with his books and looked at him and smiled and said, "All righty, well, I'll see you tomorrow." And then this individual who had been helped, who was now in his home, took heed and contemplated the grace and the graciousness of this individual who helped him with his books home, and decided at that instant in time not to take his own life, because that was the plan. He was emptying out his school locker, and he was planning on going home and ending his life. Now, is the ending of your life the end? Well, no, it isn't. Not only is it not the end, it oftentimes leads to a challenge of trying to figure out what goes on when we die. And in the very text of the soliloquy that we've just finished reading, we come to die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come? There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised patient, despised love, the law's delay? Who would put up with this crap? As opposed to denying yourself the lessons of that which must be learned, perhaps. There is an act of extricating yourself from a scenario that oftentimes is misdirected. And yet, you get to try it again. One of the women that I trained with many years ago, coming on to 25 or 30 years ago, worked for the American government with Vietnam vets who had experiences in the war in Vietnam that rendered them a bit out of sorts, if you will. They would be fighting side by side with one of their friends, and that friend would stand on a landmine and blow themselves up. And then, not a moment later, would be standing right next to them saying, "Come on, let's go," in another body that was definitely not physical, but in another body that seemed to be like their old body. And so Bob and Mike would step on a landmine and blow himself up, and Bob would look at Mike's broken, dead body on the ground, and yet Mike would be standing right there, and Bob would say, "Holy smokes, I think I'm going crazy." And they went to this woman, and this woman walked them through the aspect of the fact that you don't die. Now, that being said, that you don't die, it's very important to recognize that we saw in the experiences of these men in Vietnam, the Vietnam War, that they were experiencing their friends in another form, in another realm, in another sheath, if you will, in another vehicle. Now, many individuals that Patricia was around after the war, when she continued practicing her particular expertise, was dealing with and interacting with those people who had killed themselves. And I remember a story of a young man who had killed himself, who came from a very wealthy family, who was quite miserable and quite depressed, certainly quite depressed, and who killed himself, and the only thing that he could think of as he lay in his dead, quote, state was, "Oh, fooey, I'm dead. Rats, I'm dead." It's all he could think. I'm dead. I'm dead. And part of the integration and the interaction in the other realms of those who would hasten people on to wake up, even if they wake up in their dying state, in their dead state, would be, your body may be dead, but you aren't. And consequently, this individual that she was dealing with did in fact start to think in the next iterative stage, and that was, well, what now? And that very catalyst triggered a form of revelation for him. Now, some would say, and I would be among them, that you die every night when you go to sleep. And part of the evolution of those who choose a meditative way of life, those who choose to wake up to their higher self, to their genius, would suggest that part of the path is being able to consciously and conscientiously go to sleep at night, where you step into that realm of the dream state consciously. So you understand that you are there. You are aware that you are dreaming, and you participate in your dreams proactively. Ah, there's the rub. To die, to sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. Well, as one of my teachers has said directly, he would reside in the astral realm and interact with individuals who did not know they were dead. And he would also interact with those individuals in that realm who were fully aware that they were dead, only dead to the body. They were fully alive in other realms, and in fact, as some might say, certainly, who have played in those other realms, is it the life in a physical body that is the dream, and in the dream state, is that the reality? Ponder on that, for it certainly gives us food for thought. There is no death, only changes of state. Robin Williams, when he was chatting with Charlie Rose, talked about some of the wonderful things that he had in his interactions with other great comedians, the Jonathan Winters of the world, the Don Rickles of the world, and he was chatting about Rod Steiger. He was chatting about a lot of these things and the gems that these guys would give out as they were having dinner or whatever. And I think he had an unbelievably large respect for these men and the time he spent with them. How often on our deathbed do we think to ourselves, damn, I should have spent more time in the office? How often does that happen? I don't suspect very often. One of the things that we learn in our retooling is that while you cannot bring your car with you, or your fancy dress, or your fancy watches, or rings, or baubles, all of that which you do, which contributes to your spiritual development, goes into your cosmic bank. So all of the study you do, all of the service that you have done in order to turn on the lights of others, all of the meditation that you have done to connect yourselves to the higher realms, all of that comes with you. And all of that accrues eternally to you. So you get it from every single lifetime. Now, the other side of that fence is the vices of the personalities of your past lifetimes, they accrue too, and you have to, at some point in time, deal with all of those vices and weaknesses so that you can supplant yourself from the human kingdom and enter into another kingdom. Yeah, it's talked about. The art and the aspect of ascending, the art and the aspect of aspiring to reside in higher realms. There is a wonderful little book written called At the Feet of the Master, and it was written, believe it or not, by a 13-year-old many years ago, who each night in his dream state was brought to the feet of his master in Tibet. And his master said, in the morning, when you wake up, write down what I have given you here this evening. To which he did. And it's a wonderful little book called At the Feet of the Master. And I think the authorship is called Alcyon, and or written by Krishnamurti. It speaks of those things that Socrates and Plato instigated and started into. Truth, beauty, and goodness. And it speaks to four attributes that are very important. Robin Williams brought to his life a form of genius that was, in all fairness, by those who have been witness to his performances, inexplicably brilliant. There was an aspect of genius in him that defied comprehension at times. And he was revered by the comedians, by his peers that were around him. And he succumbed, perhaps, to the aspect of depression and also to the aspect of plugging into thought forms, which may or may not have been his own, and succumbing to the dark side in this really dark time and period of mankind. Many are suffering. Many are going through great changes. This is a time in the evolution of mankind, in the evolution of this planet, that we have never seen before. Because the planet has been evolving these past many, 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 many years. And in the changing of an era, in the ending of an era, in the beginning of an era, in the birth, as we spoke of earlier, there are challenges and there are stressors. And these are sent to task us and these are sent to test us. Let us take heed of the stressors that abound. Let us participate actively, if you will, in finding the genius which resides within. It is quite odd, and certainly not lost on all of you, how the tortured artists have an unbelievable capacity to express the genius through them, and how the geniuses of our history have all had a certain affliction, if you will, that they had to bear. These are the stressors of karma. These are the stressors of our past. And these stressors contribute to the evolution of mankind. So really, tomorrow and tomorrow that creeps in this petty pace from day to day, and all our yesterdays of lighted fools, the way to dusty death. Is life but a walking shadow, a poor player that strets and frets his hour upon the stage? Is it a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing? I say not. I say that may be a soliloquy that resides in the physical and doesn't understand the higher realms and the higher planes. Let us not get lost in the physical. Let us reside in the higher realms so that we may participate in the evolution of mankind. What an interesting time it is. What an interesting genius Robin Williams was, and he has contributed greatly through the brilliance of laughter, the brilliance of humor. There is something to the majesty of humor and the majesty of laughter in its capacity to relieve all sorts of things. Let us not lose sight of this time. Lots of food for thought today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for allowing me to be of service, and thank you for your attention to our little iteration. I look forward to sharing more with you next week, and I trust that this little food for thought episode is contributory to your own evolution and your own revelation. Thank you. This is Jeff Dunphy. This is Friday, August 15th, 2014. I will chat with you next week.